This is Marketplace Weekend. I'm Lizzie O'Leary. The U.S. lags behind Iceland, Rwanda, and Nicaragua when it comes to pay equity for women. That's according to a recent report from the World Economic Forum. In the U.S., on average, women earn about 80 cents for every dollar a man makes, according to the Department of Labor. Think about it like this. This is the sound of men's average pay, a metronome at 100 beats per minute. To get women's pay, on average, we changed that to 80 beats per minute. Why this happens comes down to a bunch of factors we'll look at today. First, some women just get paid less than men for the same jobs, like what happened to Julie Fager.
So the summer I graduated from high school, I got hired to be a lifeguard, and I was working for a company in Northern Virginia where I grew up, and then found out that if I got this license to be something called a pool operator, that I could get paid more per hour. You can actually work at a pool alone instead of having a pool that has like a separate manager. And I also loved working at a pool by myself because most of the time there weren't very many people there, which meant I could hang out and read and, you know, get a tan. Later on in the summer, I mean, I guess it was probably in August to reward those of us who had stayed for most of the season, the company actually closed down all the pools and we had a lifeguard Olympics. And the team that I was on, we happened to win. And we were really good at treading water for, you know, 25 minutes and pretending to save people. And our prize was to get to go for a whole day to have a party on the owner of the company's boat on the Chesapeake Bay. For an 18-year-old, that's pretty epic. I was talking to someone else who had the same job as me, who was a lifeguard, who was a pool operator, and it somehow came out that he was getting paid more. We had exactly the same experience, exactly the same license, and he was getting paid, you know, let's say $8 an hour, and I was getting paid $7.50. And that made me incredibly mad. You know, I grew up with like feminist activist parents, and, you know, I certainly knew that pay inequity was a thing, but I didn't expect that it was a thing in 1998. And so it was just like, oh my God, this is still happening and it's happened to me. I felt like I had to do something about it. So I did. I wrote a letter to the president of the company. You know, it was like a total charm offensive. You know, this very like, oh, I love working for this company and it's so great. And I'm sure that it was an accident that this guy who has exactly the same job as me and exactly the same qualifications is getting paid more. And I'm sure that you as a, you know, modern, young, cool businessman would not want to have your business become known for engaging in discriminatory behavior. Also being like, you don't want me to do anything more about this, right? And, you know, and I proposed a solution. Like, I think what you should do is you should pay me for the extra 50 cents per hour that this other guy was getting paid for every single hour that I worked for the entire summer. And I thought, oh, he will never agree to that. You know, that'll be so much money, he's going to say no. He wrote me back and said it was a really nice letter and agreed to give me the money in my last paycheck. So for the bargain price of $250 in back pay, he made this situation go away. But I got the extra money and I was going away for my first semester at college, so it made a big difference. And I went back and I worked there again the next summer, and my brother worked there, so, you know, we left on good terms. I'm 37 now, and if I could give advice to, you know, young men and women that are being lifeguards or whatever job they're doing, find out what the service that you're providing is worth. It's the job of the employer to maximize their resources and to pay you as little as they can get away with. That's always going to be their priority. And your priority should be not to work for any less than you can get. And talking to your coworkers about money, I mean, it's awkward, but it's the only power that you have in the workplace.
Of course, it's not just summer jobs. The wage gap runs through and across different industries. Catherine Burhide studies it. She's a professor of sociology at Skidmore College, and she's also experienced it in her own life.
I first realized it when I became department chair, and when that happens, you actually get to see the salaries in your department, and I discovered that I was actually making less money than my junior colleague, and I had no idea.
And what'd you do?
As chair, you walk in and you have a conversation with the dean where you advocate for the salaries of your colleagues. And the dean, of course, took one look at where my salary was. And I got a very nice raise that year. I think he felt guilty.
Can you help us unravel a couple of things about the wage gap? Because there are these conversations that we seem to have over and over again about why women and men in the United States make different amounts of money. When we control for things like education and race, what do we find?
Well, the wage gap is complicated. And of course, the first thing people say is, well, it's because women or people of color have less education or they have less experience. That is, it's some non-discriminatory factor that explains the wage gap. And it certainly is true that you can find that those factors matter. But when you do statistical analyses that take that into account, you discover that, in fact, women and people of color continue on the average to make less money than their white male counterparts do, even when you control for meritorious reasons for why someone might make more money than someone else. And so if you think of college faculty, we all have the same educational backgrounds. There are so few people in that line of work who don't have PhDs that you've taken that explanatory factor off the table. And then you still see that there's a wage gap.
How do we unpack the role of motherhood here? Because that, of course, is another argument. People say, well, women are more likely to take time off after having a child, or maybe they go out of the workforce. What do we know from the data?
There's something we call the motherhood penalty. And basically, we find that women who are mothers make less money than women who are not, even controlling for their years out of the labor force. So there's something that occurs when you're looking at two people and saying, well, this one has children, and she may be paying more attention to them than she is to her job. And therefore, we're going to give these opportunities to these other women who are going to not have obligations outside of the workplace. And therefore, they're going to have the opportunity to excel and therefore get a raise. Family issues are another place where the U.S. has a lot of work to do.
How does this shake out for different income brackets? Because I know that college-educated women, certainly right out of college, do pretty well compared to their male counterparts. And in some ways, the inverse can be true for folks without a college education. But how does this work both in different income brackets and then over time?
Well, ironically, the wage gap is actually greatest at the top. Entry-level wage-setting practices are the ones that it's easiest to demonstrate some kind of discriminatory intent. So therefore, you're much less likely to have the big wage gaps at the starting level and at lower level jobs. That means, of course, that over time, a small difference will grow into a much larger one if nothing is done to intervene. Every employer, certainly every large employer, needs to do, as many of them do, a wage analysis every year so that they are looking to see that inequality has crept into their wage setting practices.
Catherine Verheid, a professor of sociology at Skidmore College, thank you so much.
You're welcome.